Get a jump start on 2024 in a new Kia from Robert Brogdon's Olathe Kia. Shop their large selection, including the new Sorento, Niro, and Soul models. You'll score big with low prices, trade assist cash, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Visit OlatheKia.com.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Lock your doors and pull up your socks. My mother used to say, I don't know why, but that's what she used to say.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is an applicable bump music choice by Rudy. I just spent a good chunk of time yelling, Matt Derrick, Chiefs Digest. I'm talking to you now. I haven't introduced you yet. I'm sorry. I forgot we're doing a radio show. Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm good, Josh. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Keep the music up. Rudy, I'd like to talk about what you did again a couple segments ago. This song is called Stressed Out by 21 Pilots. And that feels relevant in all forms.
And see, honestly, didn't think about it.
That's
I just
okay.
Like the song.
That's okay. Two segments ago, Matt, we were talking about the protests and everything that came with it with Megan Strickland of 41 Action News, who was down there and doing awesome work and did a great segment with us. And he played a song called Riot. And Rudy's in music timeout, but this is getting you in the right direction, Rudy. Thank you for your service.
You're welcome.
Matt, sorry for how awkward that intro was. Heck of a day we're having here. How are you, actually? I'm asking you actually.
I would say I'm hanging in there.
Yeah?
You know, I'm hanging in there. It's been some interesting times of late, so
yeah.
I think that if you can say that you're hanging in there, it's probably about the best you could possibly say right now.
Yeah, if you asked anyone, hey, how are you, and they said, I have never been better, your friend is a psychopath. There's no way around it.
Your friend has seen some things if they haven't been doing better. Right.
Yeah, right. That's true.
The best they've done. They've seen some things.
They're either a psychopath or they've had an extremely difficult life. I gotta tell you, I am excited to get to talk to you about like why I thought Dylan McCullough was really interesting this week. It's kind of a weird space to even hop on board for that transition. It's not like there's a ton of Chief stuff going on, but we have gotten to hear from a lot of people. I was talking to you about generally Chiefs things is pretty interesting. If I can lead in with one sort of what is a weirdly transitional topic, did you have any thoughts at all about the Chiefs making a statement on, you know, gesturing and everything, or Mahomes eventually making a statement, the number of players that have spoken out? Did any of that catch your eye? Did you find any of that especially interesting?
Yeah, the Chiefs statement did catch my eye because I'll be honest. I mean, and I'm taking off my journalist hat here and putting on my just person hat. I was surprised because I don't think this is a statement that this organization probably would have made 2 or 3 years ago.
Yep.
And I think that speaks to a lot of what's going on. I think it probably speaks a little bit to listening to their employees and their players. And because it's hard for me to believe that that kind of statement came out from a Clark Hunt organization because they haven't typically done things like that and phrased things that way. And I certainly think it's a step in the right direction. I mean, don't misinterpret that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to know, you know, what's kind of going on behind the scenes, you know, if this is a reflection of changing views within the organization, if it's changing views because of players, if it's the last few years and some of the conversation that Clark has had with his players, because he's had plenty. He's had them with Marcus Peters. He's had them with Tyrann Mathieu. He's had them with Frank Clark. I'm just really curious. But like I said, I don't think that's a statement they would have made a couple of years ago, and I think it's a move in the right direction.
I think you're totally right. I saw they released a statement, and my first thought was just sort of like, before pre-reading it, was like, well, better than nothing, because nothing in this, as so many teams have made some sort of statement. You start, it was similar to how the national anthem conversations ended up going, where, you know, if you weren't making a statement, that felt like a statement. But then specifically reading it, and it happened again whenever I was reading it at the beginning of the show today, the phrase "the senseless murders," it gave me chills a little bit because of what you just said. Because it's not like the world's most pointed statement, whatever. And it's not directly calling for police reform nationwide, and you know, whatever. But there's phrasing in this that I was also truly surprised to see and found myself kind of honestly like grateful for the reasons you just mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same way. And especially reading the first paragraph, that first paragraph of their statement was very Chiefs-like.
Yeah, it was, we're going to stop doing, we're not going to do our Super Bowl rewatch until next week was the first paragraph. Yeah, I got very nervous.
It was pure business and everything. So, you know, that was like, okay, this is par for the course.
Yep.
And you're right. I mean, seeing that phrase, the senseless murders, it resonated. I mean, that's something that I, like I said, I don't think that this organization would have sent out a statement like this 3 years ago. And I do think that it's certainly a reflection of the times. It's a reflection of the NFL. It's a reflection of where the players are. And I think it's, you know, a recognition in some ways. And like I agree. I mean, I think it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to say about it. I do circle back to it. And I don't know. I think a lot of this can depend on for me, it literally can depend on the minute and the last tweet that I've seen. But I have found myself kind of jolting back and forth between like a very deep, heavy sadness and an exhaustion of sorts and a little bit of optimism. And honestly, seeing that from the Chiefs, it makes me feel a little bit optimistic. Like you, with you pointing out, this is an organization that has not been here. That is here now in this sense, right? I don't mean here like in the community or whatever, but like has not been at this point kind of in that space now.
Well, I'm going to echo your thoughts because you put it pretty eloquently just there. I'm the same way. I mean, I watch things and then there's been times that I just deplug for a couple of hours because there's just too much sadness going on in the world. And then, and I probably, you know, feel a little guilty for not doing more to make the world a better place.
Yes.
And then, yes, there's things that come along to make you optimistic and feel better. And it's been a roller coaster of a couple of days, couple of weeks, couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. The guilt aspect of stepping away and then feeling guilty that you have the ability to step away from it is a very... I literally was going. I was thinking that as you were before you even got there, and then I also thought, you know, this show for the next week might just be like me calling my friends and just talking about how we feel and see if other people relate to it. Which I feel like we could also use a little bit of. So, appreciate that perspective, Matt, because that adds a little more depth to what I was feeling without totally being able to understand why I was feeling it. And I feel like I understand it slightly better now. So I appreciate that.
Well, if you figure out how you're feeling, let me know because I don't know how I'm feeling.
I will text you in 2 minutes while we're still doing this and it'll just say bad. And then in two minutes afterwards, it'll say better.
And then just the shrug emoji.
And then a lot of shrug emojis. So we can talk about something else, but I do genuinely appreciate that. We have heard from a bunch of people in the organization, but we got a bunch of positional coaches. We've gotten a handful of players and everything. I'm going to start by asking about the running back room because I think it's actually interesting. And Steele McCullough, just a good conversation. And I can't remember who asked, and so apologies to whoever in the Chiefs media corps, but somebody asked about the Rooney Rule and the might have been Darren. If it was, shout out to Darren. Maybe it was Darren. I don't know. But about the Rooney Rule and how it means assistant coaches get they're minorities that have to be interviewed for assistant coach jobs or your coordinator jobs, and his path and was like, hey, so do you want to continue rising up the ranks? And I was so ready for like, well, you know, I'm grateful for every opportunity. He was like, yeah, I do. That's why we're all here, right? We all want to keep rising up the coaching ranks. And I enjoyed listening to his press conference. I've heard the whole thing like 3 times now, I think, and I've continually enjoyed it. Did you have any of those same feelings listening to Dylan McCullough, the Chiefs running back coach?
Yeah, you know, I think we had the same thought kind of shoot through our heads. I remember the question being asked, and I was fully bracing at this point, say, you know, hey, love my job, love, you know, absolutely, yeah. Just love being here. That's all I'm thinking about right now. And that wasn't the answer that we got. And, you know, it's unique in a way because he said something that is true for him. I'm not sure that it is true for everybody. I mean,
yeah.
The fact that he has the ambition to say, yeah, I want to move up. I want to be a coordinator. I want to be a head coach. I mean, that's That's what we're here for, to move up. And there's not everybody's like that. There's a lot of guys who aspire to be an assistant coach, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, they like teaching football. They don't want the headaches of being a coordinator. They certainly don't want the headaches of being a head coach. I mean, that's not true for everybody. I mean, everybody's got their own feeling about how far they want to progress. And sure, some people want to be head coaches, and it never comes around for them. Maybe they want to be coordinators, and they never get the chance. But, you know, it was pretty refreshing. And McAuliffe is certainly, I think, pretty candid, and, mm-hmm. and that's refreshing. I mean, once again, we're in a sport where not everybody is that candid always.
that's true. That is true. I can confirm that report is true. Even, not everyone is that candid.
Even in the Chiefs organization, sure. Not everyone is that candid.
Very much the truth. I can tell you without naming who isn't candid. It's one of the reasons I enjoy Steve Spagnuolo so much. Everybody, I can't speak about anybody else. Dave Tobe also. That's the list.
There you go.
Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy are good at coach speak, and so is Patrick Mahomes. That's okay. That's not critical. It's not critical. They're good at filtering themselves. I'm not, so I resent them for it.
Well, and you know what? I mean, taking us off on a complete tangent and probably somewhat related to what the world is today,
yeah.
I think Eric Bieniemy is in one of the most difficult positions in the world. And I asked him about it last week to say see if he had wanted to, you know, same thing about it, and he really didn't, and I didn't expect him to, but you know, this is a man who wants to be a head coach,
yep.
And you know, the fact is that the NFL for the most part expects its head coaches to be pretty buttoned up,
yep.
And yet at the same time, he has become a figure. I mean, he is the face of the Rooney Rule in the NFL right now, and whether or not it's working. And you've even got people now who are saying the revision to the Rooney Rule now is the Bieniemy Rule.
Yep.
I mean, he is becoming a face for diversity in the NFL, and I'm not entirely sure that he's comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he certainly doesn't want to speak out about it. He
yes.
hasn't. Maybe he does want to, and he feels that that's not what's expected of him as a future head coach. I think it's an incredibly difficult position for him to be in, because I know that from talking to him in the past, and you can see it, Eric Bieniemy is one of the most passionate people that you are ever going to come across.
Yeah.
And I sincerely doubt that there is any topic, whether it's about football or life in general, that he does not have strong feelings about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the position that he's put in is that he's not really allowed to express those feelings, or he doesn't feel that he can express those feelings. And I think that's an incredibly tough position to be in. And at the end of the day, there's an Eric Bieniemy expression for you. At the end of the day, I think he's probably handling it as best he can.
Yeah, I think you're dead on. The thing of I've definitely said this to someone texted me and asked about this. I may have said this on the radio already. It doesn't really matter. I will now. If you I do not mean to question his like truthfulness at all. The reserved and the filtering and all of that, he's just like, that's a trait that he's good at. That's that thing that you can be good at, and he is. But someone asked, like, do you really think that he believes that that him being black has nothing to do with him being a head coach, not being a head coach yet or whatever? And I said I can't know that specifically, I suppose, but I will say that statistically speaking, it is really hard for a black assistant coach, a black coordinator, to get hired as a head coach. We're seeing that around, seeing proof of that around the league all over the place. And it only gets more difficult if you are a black coordinator that acknowledges that you believe that your skin color is one of the reasons you haven't gotten a job yet. Like that is only going to make that process even more tumultuous. That's unfair that would make the process more tumultuous, but I believe wholeheartedly that that's something that he's thought of. And you know, I'm just going to be appreciative of what I have, and I'm going to keep saying that over and over again. Eventually, I'll get a chance, even if it comes a year, 2 years, 3 years after it should have. And I'll, you know, to use another expression, I'll drag my ass across the finish line whenever we get there.
I have an expression I say when I'm at the poker table and I'm bluffing, because I steal it from Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is everything I say is true from a certain point of view. And, you know, I think that's probably true in this case. I mean, I think that what Eric Bieniemy is probably saying is true.
Yeah.
From a certain point of view.
Absolutely.
But, you know, at the same time, I mean, come on. I mean, if I'm Eric Bieniemy and I see some of the guys who've gotten head coaching jobs, I'm absolutely saying WTF.
Yes.
You know, it baffles just the imagination about why the NFL, why some organizations have made the hiring decisions that they've made, because And granted, some of it makes sense because, you know, some organizations hire mistakes repeatedly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, why should I not be surprised that the Cleveland Browns don't hire Eric Bieniemy, because the Cleveland Browns never hire a good coach.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's what they do.
Right.
So the fact that he doesn't get that job, or he doesn't get with the Jets, I mean, these kind of teams don't hire good coaches. So clearly they're going to pass on him. But, and I've said this for a while now. I mean, Eric Bieniemy is going to get a good job.
Yep.
And if he gets the right job, he's going to be a really, really good NFL head coach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody who enters a bad situation, you know, sometimes can't make anything. You can't make chicken salad out of everything.
Right.
but I think Eric Bieniemy with the right team, like maybe an underachieving veteran team, I mean, I thought he'd be perfect for Dallas.
Yeah.
Dallas is the kind of team that needs an Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah.
I think they'd be a really good team with him as a head coach. Maybe they'll win with McCarthy. I don't know. I think he'd be really good with a team like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe Rudy's greatest on-air moment essentially went like this. I was talking about Eric Bieniemy, and I think I may have said, if you remember specifically, you feel free to butt in. I think I essentially said, you know, look, it's not like just some wide receivers coach that stands next to Bill Belichick is getting these jobs. And I said that dead honest, and then Rudy just went, Joe Judge. And I went, oh, no, that
you
is
mean Joe Judge?
It, yep. That is happening. That did just happen.
Yep, that's exactly how it went down.
Did I say receivers coach for Belichick?
You didn't,
or did I just say someone that stood next
just,
to Bill Belichick?
You just said receivers coach. I don't believe you said Bill Belichick.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure you said, it's not like there's just some receivers coach out there just getting a job.
Some white receivers
white
coach.
White receivers coach.
Yeah.
And then I don't believe I said it on air initially. I think I just said it in the talk bag. I was just like, Joe Judge.
Joe Judge. It's maybe your greatest on-air moment.
Your reaction at that point was
yeah, because I walked right into it. So yeah, I think that's a good point. How do we get to this one? I just feel like we all have a lot of feelings. Yeah, that's right.
I blame, as always is the case when I'm talking to you, Josh, and the topic gets off on the rails, I blame myself.
It's so unnecessary. You have so many totally viable people to blame. Whenever this show gets weird, like it could be Rudy's fault. We have stuffed animals in the studio. Like it could be my fault or their fault. We have so many options. You are, I will say confidently, you're the least of our issues.
I'm putting my money on Cardio Snow.
Yeah, we have a snowman that's, frankly, terrifying.
Cardio Snow, the killer snowman.
I got
that
it.
That makes sense.
He rings a little jingle bell, and then his head starts spinning around in a way that's truly upsetting. That's what it sounds like. I know it's an audio medium, but Facebook loved that. So, listen, I mean, do you want me to just ask you about the running back room so you can tell me like who you're voting for? Like, what do you want, Matt? I feel like I gave you the bridge to a football topic, because I wasn't gonna try to keep shoving you down the lane that I wanted to go down anyway. And then you're like, you know what? Let's talk about the Rooney rule. Whee!
So I definitely sidetracked that conversation. That was definitely on me.
That one actually was on you. That's funny.
It's a crowded running back room.
Sure, it sure is. And so what did you think about the president's comments this afternoon? Oh, the running back. Yeah, okay. I'm going to
just ask.
Exactly
what I would segue. Exactly.
That's what I was thinking. Do you think that the media is filled with very rotten people? And then also, what do you think about the Chiefs running back room?
It's a lot of guys in that running back room.
Sure are a lot of guys in that running back room. It was Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com here on Sports Radio 810. Reset the show, get our footing. I've been on this particular take now that I'm a little bit worried about, just because anything positive that Clyde Edwards-Helaire does is already going to show up in my timeline 4,000 times. But I'm not saying he won't have success in year one. But my new sort of fixed version of that opinion is, I won't have him in any fantasy leagues this year, because it's always so hard for rookie skill position players to have large roles to play in Andy Reid's offense. Kareem Hunt was the exception, but Spencer Ware got hurt that year. You hear McCullough talk about, you know, all the stuff Clyde has to do still, plus this offseason is weird, plus Damian Williams, whenever he's healthy, as you would hope he would be the first, whatever, half of the season. They're obviously very familiar with him. Darwin Thompson is coming into that second year. Daryl Williams was getting a lot of touches and getting good work before his injury. They bring in DeAndre Washington. Like, it is a really full running back room, genuinely. I don't know what you envision for year one of Clyde Edwards-Helaire or who is the favorite to make it out of that room and everything, but that is a genuinely interesting position for me.
It is, and I think, I mean, you're not completely off the target on that.
I'll take that.
Either, which is
I'll get not completely off target. Did I hit the target, you think, or am I just off the bullseye? How do I do?
I'm really falling down on my cliches right now. But yeah. I mean, I think it's really hard because and the pressure from your question of the fantasy aspect. Who's going to be the goal line back? Who's going to be that guy that gets most of the touches inside the 20? I don't know. I mean, especially hard since, you know, at this time of year, we normally would have about 10 practices, OTA workouts, that we'd already have a pretty good sense of where the depth chart was falling and how much that Clyde Edwards-Helaire was working his way into the first team and working with the ones. But without that, we're just guessing.
Yeah.
And we're probably going to be guessing for a little while, but does he have the skill set to be a guy that ends up on the field most of the time? He does. And he's also in a running back room right now with no one who has ever, been the guy for an entire season. I mean, Damian Williams hasn't done it.
Yep.
He's been really, really good when he's played, especially late in the season. But then again, he was kind of at below average most of last year until it got hot at the end. But he's never proven that he can do it for 16 games. Not quite Edwards-Helaire hasn't either. He's been really, really good in college.
Yeah.
But his skill set is better than anybody else in the room. Yeah. I mean, that's just it. So if he's able to pick up this offense, he's able to pick up the little things that he has to do, and it seems like there's the potential because everybody that you talk to about this, they say he's got the attitude to be able to do it. And that trio, I mean, Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, Dylan McCullough, they all believe that attitude is the biggest part. That if they got a running back who is willing to pass block, who's willing to take the ball in big moments, who's willing to do all the dirty work that a running back's got to do, they feel like they can teach the rest of it.
Yeah.
If they got the skills and they got the attitude, they feel like they can teach the rest. And if he picks it up, he could be a breakout guy and be just like Kareem Hunt. But there's a lot of X factor, too.
It's so early to ask this, but do you have a feeling of, who is running back 3, 4, and 5, the order of 3, 4, and 5 right now? Because, Darwin Thompson wasn't a high draft pick, but he was a selection. We all kind of fell in love with some of those traits last year. Taking a year is not a huge concern for me. DeAndre Washington, I feel like skill set what made sense, but tough draw with them drafting Edwards-Helaire, certainly. And Darrell Williams, I could make an argument, excluding the playoffs maybe, he might have had the best regular season stretch for a Chiefs running back last year, at least a couple of moments in a row. Do you have a feel for how that is at least playing out right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, Darrell Williams is the clear number three, just because he is that third down guy who can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I would probably at this point, and I guess the best comp for him right now at this point would be Tre'Kendrick West. Mm. He's a guy who they feel like they can step in and start if they need, but he's also the kind of guy that they feel like they can put out there in any situation that they trust.
Yeah.
So I'd say he's the clear number three. DeAndre Washington's interesting because I feel like that his track record is strong enough that he could have gone a lot of places. I mean, I can't imagine that Kansas City was the only offer he got.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, he did arrive here before Edwards-Helaire, but the Chiefs were willing to go out and get him, knowing what they had and that, Edwards-Helaire might be a guy that they take. So I got to think that they feel pretty good about him and his prospects, and he's a really good special teams player. So, that might be a deciding factor. And Thompson, I mean, that's probably the guy that, to me, that's really on the cut line. I mean, if they go with – I mean, that would be a deep backfield. I mean, then you throw in Anthony Sherman too. How many guys they keep there might depend on how many tight ends they end up keeping, whether a guy like John Lovett makes the team. But – Thompson, hey, is he a kind of guy that maybe he ends up on the practice squad as a developmental guy this year.
That's fair. Yeah, I could see that. I could see him. The other guys, I mean, either by roster restrictions or by name, you know, I don't know if Washington would be. I think he would qualify. I am not a practice squad scholar, though, so feel free to correct me.
I don't believe he would, because I think he has at least 3 full accrued seasons.
Okay, I felt like this might be 3. This is good radio. This is a good thing that I said out loud without actually knowing or checking first. But yeah, I could see Darwin Thompson just like getting cut, and then honestly, I don't know, maybe there would be some other team that was like, oh, we liked him actually in the draft, we just didn't get him or whatever, so maybe he gets scooped up. But I don't know that honestly. I know this is more controversial than anything I will say next segment about the police in America, but man, the Clyde Edwards-Helaire pick, like the standard that he has to hit to validate that selection is really high, and that's not just me being picky. Like for him to actually earn that, the justification of that value, he's got to be excellent. He's got 4 seasons already, DeAndre Washington. I'm an idiot, so that's cool. I'm just gonna scoot back from the microphone. You can talk about Clyde Edwards-Helaire again.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. As a first round running back, he's got to be really, really good. But you know, right? It seems that in the NFL, at least in the current trend, unless your name is Trent Richardson and you're a running back taken early on in the draft that high, you're usually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I still feel like it's a very low risk selection. I think this is a guy that really fits the profile for what the Chiefs look for. Somebody who could really fit in this offense super well. And you know, I don't want people to just absolutely mock you on Twitter for years, Josh. So you know, I'm not going to be, you know, cheering for Clyde Edwards-Helaire just for that reason alone.
But
I mean, they're going to do that regardless.
That's like true.
But I'd be stunned if he bust. I mean, this just seems like a perfect fit. And if he's got the right attitude and he's willing to work, I think they'll make him a star.
I think there's a very good chance of that also. And it's just like Leonard Fournette actually has had a nice run in Jacksonville. Like, his numbers are pretty good. But if he's Leonard Fournette, that's a huge – who actually caught some passes. If he's Leonard Fournette, that's a huge disappointment based off of the conversation we've had, and also just based off of, like, the fact that, you know, Darrell Williams might be Leonard Fournette in this offense if he played 16 games. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think that because of the position and because of the depth of it, he has to be better at his spot than Christian Fulton or whatever would have had to have been at his spot, if that makes sense. Like he has to be significantly better than replacement level, where like this team could actually just use a replacement level corner. They already have replacement level running backs because everybody does, if that makes sense.
You know, I would say, though, that if he ends up being a 1,400, 1,600-yard or scrimmage guy with, you know, 6 to 8 touchdowns for a Super Bowl team, I mean, that's what he is. I mean, that would be a hit.
Yeah.
I don't think that would – I think he'd be viewed as an all-pro if he puts up Leonard Fournette numbers with a ring.
I guess, man, but, like, we made so much fun of the conversation of should the Chiefs bring in Leonard Fournette, and there are a lot of reasons that are not – 1-to-1, like the contract whatever. I'm not actually going back to that, but he needs to do something that does make the offense appreciably better, I think, and that I mean, and he very well could. I'm nervous for it, honestly, because I want the Chiefs offense to be as good as humanly possible, and that means for me, like, he almost has to be Christian McCaffrey, and that's, there's been one of those, you know, like in recent highly drafted history. But
you know, and maybe this is a bit of a straw man's argument, but I mean, I would say that this Chiefs offense over the last 3 or 4 seasons has been its absolute best when Kareem Hunt was on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when he was on the field with Patrick Mahomes, it was a whole other level.
Yeah.
And this team won a Super Bowl only because Damian Williams played like a Pro Bowl, all-pro running back for 4 weeks. Because if Damian Williams does not play like an all-pro running back in the Super Bowl, they don't win that game.
No, but I think my counterpoint to that is that Damian Williams did that successfully. So what are we doing? Like, Would that not, if it was a healthy Darrell Williams, or if it was DeAndre, could DeAndre Washington not have done that? Because if only Damian Williams does it, why don't we just have Damian Williams do it?
Because Damian Williams' track record is that he can do it 4 times a year.
That's
and
true.
The Chiefs want a guy who can do it 20.
You're right. And I think that's fair. And I think if a guy can do that, if Edwards-Helaire can do that 20 times in a year, then the pick will probably be well justified. My concern is that he does it 8 to 10 times a year instead of 4 or 5, and then I have to eat bleep on Twitter for three straight seasons. But I think if he does it for 20, then you won't hear me continue to complain about it. You'll hear me complain about lots of other things, but not specifically that. I do think that we talked about the Chiefs statement and the Rooney Rule, and I think I'm probably going to get the most tweets from this segment about Clyde Edwards-Helaire. So great work,
Matt. There's any doubt about that. Absolutely.
I appreciate you derailing us to something less controversial. Actually, in retrospect, I really should just let you drive this segment. I'll eventually learn from my mistakes.
Well, that's all we can all do, Josh. Just learn from your mistakes.
And I have so many. To do that, and you have so many of mine to choose from. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, I presume.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Matt Derrick, ChiefsDigest.com. Follow him on Twitter at Matt Derrick. I haven't learned yet, but we've had two really good conversations with other people on the show tonight, and both times I've just gotten in the way. Eventually I'll learn.
No, you won't.
Not now, Rudy. I'm talking. You also go to @MattDerrick on Twitter and buy Matt's books. Do it as a public apology on my behalf. I'm sorry, Rudy. What were you going to say? Let's go to break.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We're here for a one-on-one interview with our friend Travis Kelce. Travis, I know you listen to a lot of Almost Entirely Sports. What do you think about Joshua Briscoe and Beards McFly?
I mean, I don't think they suck. I can tell you that.
Thank you, Travis.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to both Megan Strickland and Matt Derrick who have joined us tonight. And I also, if you are still with us, I appreciate you, the listener, and your patience with what has been, I think, a good show, but a clunky one and a weird one. And a largely serious one, but that also has had fun in it. So I probably only sarcastically do this for the most part, but I do appreciate everyone who is regularly listening to this show and everything that entails. I genuinely appreciate it. There are a few more things from the weekend that I kind of wanted to talk about, and some other things that I mentioned earlier, and I'll happily say it again. I listened to, believe it or not, I actually missed Seren's Open today, which I saw from multiple tweets was really good. That's the one thing I haven't yet listened to from the station.
I thought you were just going to say you missed Seren.
I missed seeing him. That's also true. But I
got to see him once because internet went down in this area, so he had to come in and do the show.
Good.
So I was like, oh, hey, I haven't seen you in like 2 months.
And then you coughed in his open mouth.
And then we never saw each other again.
So I still have to go back and I want to listen to what Seren had to say. But I listened to the opens from the Zone and from the Border Patrol today. And like I said, we talked about just sort of the grand, the 30,000 foot view of this a few times. We talked about it a little bit on Friday night. We talked about it a little bit on Sunday morning. But hearing the guys talk about it today, Stephen and Nate and Jake also and Anderson today, Corey wasn't in, which might have been why the show was so good. Why did I just sideswipe Corey? That's completely unnecessary. But I was encouraged by them, and I wanted to add kind of specifically to one thing that Stephen and Nate were talking about. In an absolutely uncritical way, I am genuinely very grateful that they took time to talk about it this morning. But it reminded me a few parts of it, like these some genuine pleas for a unity and a togetherness that we simply don't have right now. And there is nothing wrong with asking for that and asking for people to help get to that and find that sense of togetherness that we talk so much about being polarized and divided and everything, all factually accurate. But one thing that I've been personally wrestling with for a while is sometimes I ask that question of like, hey, how can we come together? And it feels very aimless. It feels very meandering and very wandering and kind of rambling. In other words that mean that same thing. Why did I become a thesaurus for 4 seconds? You know, I feel like I'm wandering, meandering, rambling, aimless, need a compass, lost in the woods, directionless. Why? Why did I do that? And I'm trying to figure out how to keep moving with that energy, how to take that energy and get it to point in a direction. And I know that's something that a lot of people are struggling with right now. And that's where I'm at right now, is to try to have this sucks, let's come together, but to acknowledge that's not the end of this. And then get to that point, take that step. That's a big, important step that I feel like a lot of people are learning to take right now. And that fills me with hope. But I also want to then take that next step also, and even to figure out what that means, what that looks like. So what does actual progress look like in terms of bringing people together? We've got to find that and then call that out, whatever we find at the base of it. I'm holding an invisible baseball as I say that. Like, I'm seeing a glowing orb in my hand. Like, yes, this is the next step. This is the thing to go to. I feel like I'm Rex Hudler if I was in Dragon Ball Z, I think. Is that the Rudy Healer?
Kamehameha? Rudy? Is that what you're going with?
Sure. Look at my hands.
Yes.
That. Yep. Did I do a Dragon Ball Z thing?
I mean, really, it's any sort of chi blast, but the famous one is the Kamehameha by Goku.
Goku?
Yes.
I was looking for Goku.
Goku. Yeah.
I was
he
looking
does
for
the Kamehameha.
You keep saying that, like, eventually I'm going to be like, oh, yeah, the Kamehameha.
Yeah, Josh, it's the Kamehameha.
Yeah, of course, the Kamehameha.
You know, no culture.
I feel like Rex Hudler meets Goku right now. I feel like I'm holding a glowing baseball. This is the answer. But as people have talked about unity, and as I've been trying to figure out what that looks like, there can't be unity until there is progress and some universal understandings that we all share. I have a sports analogy. You're welcome, everybody. I'll make this one easy for you. If 500 Raiders fans show up on Twitter, terrifying already, 500 Raiders fans show up on Twitter to explain to you how Derek Carr is actually just like one step below Patrick Mahomes, like they're 1A and 1B. You are not going to then come to me and say, hey, why don't you get along with these Raiders? Why don't you unify those 500 Raiders fans? Why don't you come together on this? Why can't you just agree with them on enough things? Why can't you just come together on those things? Because how can I unite with someone who isn't going to say unequivocally, Derek Carr is worse at quarterback than Patrick Mahomes, and also, black lives do in fact matter. What is our common ground if we can't have those two things? I picked the two most obvious things in all of culture, by the way. You have to agree on a few base rules there. You know what I mean? Like you can't link arm in arm philosophically with someone who thinks Derek Carr and Patrick Mahomes are basically the same, and then also they're afraid to say that Black Lives Matter because they makes them uncomfortable for some number of reasons. We have to have some amount of agreement first, and we all have moralities. Like, hey, why don't we just unify with these people who think that something morally reprehensible to you, whatever. and the specific conversation around the phrase Black Lives Matter has always been a little bit interesting to me and a little bit frustrating to me. I'm white. Hi, everybody. It's Evan's little name tag that just says that, but for radio. And I've never been threatened by the phrase Black Lives Matter because no one is finishing that sentence by saying Black Lives Matter more than anyone else's lives or Black Lives Matter more than your white life. No one's ever said that to me. And so I don't impose that there. The postscript that I keep seeing following the phrase Black Lives Matter is Black Lives Matter, and it sure looks like a lot of you need to be reminded of that sometimes. That, I feel like if you can open up to that shift in postscript, I feel like it becomes a lot easier to see that as a statement that you would, of course, unequivocally agree with. No one says out loud, you never get Black Lives Matter. No, they don't. No one ever does that because that's impossibly racist, like in a way that is easy to call out. A lot of times, little forms of racism are hard to call out because they don't always come under a white hood. So it can be more subtle than that. But that's why Black Lives Matter met with All Lives Matter is a discounting of an already discounted group. Again, I think the postscript of that matters. And I'm guessing most people don't really need that full, retreading of that conversation. But the one thing that I've heard some people talking about in terms of statements made by teams and players and everything is to talk about racial justice or getting rid of racial injustice or you know, senseless murders and some phrases that do contain power. But a lot of them don't include references to policing. And it is kind of wild that like this started and similar protests in years past have started with police power, with overreach and violence and killings. And right now, if you look at Twitter at any given point, you see a lot of times these protests about police violence being met with additional police violence that is kind of jarring to me. And I have like this, I promise I can be preachy. I know that I've got a mirror about lots of things, particularly that I was right about Patrick Mahomes and you guys were wrong. So you're welcome. Unless Seth is listening, in which case Seth and I were right and you guys were wrong. This is not meant to be preachy. Also, Rudy, we can make this the last segment if you have that flexibility on your end.
Yeah, I can make that work.
Thank you.
I'll let you cook.
Because this would be a very awkward time to take a break before hopping into this, but it's going to be a full segment of conversation. So thank you, Rudy. Appreciate you and all of your work. Except for when you played Riot a second ago. I'll let
keep
it,
bringing it up.
I'll let it go eventually. this is not leading to me being preachy, at least to the very best of my abilities. I'm trying to ask genuine, honest questions that not everyone is capable of answering here. I'm also not holding that over your heads. If you say, I don't know the answer to that, that's totally fine. But in the conversation about policing that we're in it now. This is not a political conversation, even though I would argue a lot of this is true for politics, but this is just culture, and this is just the world, and this is just the plaza right now, and this is just outside. This is just Twitter. This is just the world happening, and so I feel more comfortable talking about it. The police has just American police force, to be vague, has been clearly, like, very well insulated from, in a lot of cases, justice. They can do things that you and I would be arrested for and charged and put away with without a second thought. And you've seen that not happen in a lot of police-based cases over recent years.
and that matters. It also matters that they are at this point, and I've heard that this has largely been in effect since 9/11, which I understand being a traumatic cultural event that changes how you view law enforcement. I get it. But theoretically, since then, police has been really heavily militarized, but not as heavily educated in matters of de-escalation and understanding other people's mental health and their own cultural context and history and everything. I think advocating for more education and training for police should be a deeply undivisive opinion. I'm willing for my tax dollars to go to more education for a police force. I would advocate for that easy. I would probably feel pretty good about some of that, maybe saving some money on the big guns and the full SWAT outfits for non-SWAT members. But can we turn that into education? I don't know. That's above my head. But if I can, I'm leading to a genuine question here, but if I can give you like two tiny paragraphs from an article from the Huffington Post in 2015, I just was reading today and I found this jarring. In the United States this year alone, this is from 2015, I don't have more recent numbers, there have been more than 400 fatalities as a result of police gunshots. In Germany, there have been 4. Even countries with the highest crime rates in the world see significantly lower numbers of fatal deaths by police. British officers shot their guns just 51 times between 2003 and 2013. Canada averaged 12 fatal police shootings each year between 1999 and 2009. In Japan, no one has been shot by police since 2012. I'm not, again, this is not me being a police abolitionist or something right now, but can we acknowledge that America is the outlier there? Without the text line blowing up about how your brother or father or aunt is a police officer and they would never, because I don't know that person. I don't know that person like you know them. I don't know what they're like at home. I don't know the officers in the streets. But can we acknowledge how much of an outlier we are there as a society, as a country? And so this is honestly, a genuine question that I asked on Twitter last night, not to be clever, not to be snippy, but to ask an honest question that I'm hoping that someone will be able to answer from a place of knowledge and relatability. And if I could be so greedy, perhaps humility that I'm also trying to bring to the table on this one. You can tweet me at JB Briscoe. Do follow me first. It's fine if you don't. It's okay. If you're a person who has had positive experiences with the police or has a loved one in the force or you are in the police force and you're all about protect and serve, or you know that they are, or again, you've yourself just had positive experiences, why is it so difficult to condemn the obviously wrong actions? I'm honestly asking why that's not more prevalent. Why you wouldn't just say, yeah, arrest the officers that stood around the officer that killed George Floyd, because they were standing there as that was happening for 9 minutes. And this doesn't even account for a core human desire for people to not be needlessly injured or killed. It's just, if you subscribe to the idea there are a few bad apples spoiling the bunch, why wouldn't you be the most vocal about getting those bad apples away from your good batch? It doesn't make sense to me. And I feel like oftentimes the defense of bad actors ends up becoming a thing that law enforcement as a whole does, and it's something I truly don't understand. It's like I'm struck by, again, the video of a protester, frankly, maybe this can be a rioter, was chipping up the sidewalk to throw chunks of it and just damage property. And then a bunch of other people yanked that guy up and walked him over to police and said, he's not with us. Get him out of here. He is not here for our message. He is here to make trouble and to destroy things. I don't know why whatever your group is, why wouldn't you want to
to remove the thing that gives everyone else in your group a bad name? Why would you want to exile the bad actors? And maybe lots of people in the police force do. I don't want to even want to insinuate that no one does that. It just seems like that's a very that's kind of a road less traveled that seems like it would be the obvious one. And maybe there's something about police unions in there and everything that I don't understand and that someone can explain to me. But it's all something that again, I think you have to acknowledge we're an outlier on that one. And that we can do better. That's also not offensive. Saying, hey, we can do better here is not an attack. It's a hope. It's what I think we all want as much as any of us want anything is let's do better. But that's a team effort. It takes everybody.